A very good morning and welcome to Share Radio. I'm Georgie Frost, here with you every weekday from 9 until 1 on digital, online and through the Share Radio mobile app, making the pound in your pocket go a little bit further. The team from This Is Money, the award-winning finance website, are back in the studio for their weekly catch-up. Today I'm joined by editor Simon Lambert and pensions expert Tanya Jeffries. And this week, they're tackling banks and whether they're back to their old ways.
Will there be a time when we don't have any conduct or litigation? I don't think that'll ever be the case, but I think that we will get through the big cases of the past and deal with those issues.
We've had a swathe of half-yearly results from the banks as more billions are put aside for PPI mis-selling. Also, you're hoping to get a cheap deal on your mortgage? You better hurry. We discover the top five cash ISAs and... No, not that sort of bond. We talk retail and mini bonds and alternative investments. Fancy keeping your cash in a car park? What are the options? What you should look out for? And it's good news if, like me, this sound sends shivers down your spine.
Unexpected item in bagging area. Unexpected item in bagging area. Unexpected item in bagging area. Remove this item before continuing.
Thankfully, Tesco have removed that particular item and that particular voice, and it will be at all 12,000 of its self-service checkouts by the end of October. They'll be replacing it with a new voice instead, said to be more calming. More calming phrases as well. So we want to know today, whose voice would you replace it with? A very good morning, Simon. A very good morning, Tanya.
Hello, Georgie.
Hello, Georgie.
I think maybe I'd go Nigel Farage in a sort of jolly kind of like pint in one hand, cigarette in the other, standing outside the pub way.
Or actually, controversial. But
or
okay.
Maybe, to make it a bit less political, Keanu Reeves in his Point Break incarnation, you know, the sort of "you're going down, Bodie," that kind of voice, basically. I shopped in Tesco last night, and the woman was still there.
October.
Yeah.
Patience, Simon. I can keep playing out the clip if you want to. Tanya, yourself?
I'll go for Helen Mirren. Actually, I think she's got a gorgeous voice, and she always sounds really friendly and together. And I think if I'm going to use one of those tills, which I have to say I don't, I avoid them like the plague. But if I did have to use one, I'd want her to speak.
This is great. It's like having three sisters. I've got one sister who I absolutely adore, so this is like having three more.
That is Helen Mirren there. You're not the first person to suggest that. She was actually talking about a waxwork of herself. Annie, a very good morning to you.
Oh, you frightened me. I didn't know where Helen Mirren came from then all of a sudden. So here's a few examples of voices that you could have at the checkout.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
It's an architectural masterpiece.
I'm Brian Blessed!
So there we are. I'd like Brian Blessed. Georgie, you would like Captain Picard, I understand?
Yeah, I'd love him to say tea, Earl Grey, hot, Georgie, in your bagging area.
Emma's gone for Tom Cruise, and Pete's gone for Agnes Brown from Mrs. Brown's Boys, and John's gone from Richard Briers. Any more suggestions for us, do keep them coming in. You can tweet us at Share Radio UK. You can email consumingissues@shareradio.co.uk or just drop us a text to 66777. Just start your text with the word share.
Thank you very much, Annie.
To celebrate Share Radio's first year, we're giving away a Pure Evoke D2 digital radio every single week. Many lucky winners have already received theirs, and you could be next. To enter, visit shareradio.co.uk, register your details, and you'll be entered into the weekly draw. Open to UK residents over the age of 16. Visit our website for full terms and conditions. Share Radio, sharing ideas about money.
You're listening to Share Radio. I'm Georgie Frost, here with you until 1 o'clock this afternoon on digital, online and through the Share Radio mobile app. The team from This Is Money, the award-winning finance website, are back in the studio for their weekly catch-up today. So editor Simon Lambert, journalist Tanya Jeffries. And as banks have been reporting their half-yearly figures, are they returning, sliding back to their bad habits? Lloyds today announced a 38% increase in profits to £1.2 billion, but the part taxpayer-owned bank also confirmed it set aside a further £1.4 billion to compensate customers missold PPI. Similar situation for Barclays, netting almost £200 profit per second, despite the PPI bill soaring by £600 million. Despite this, RBS Chief Executive Ross McEwan thinks the scandals of the past are largely coming to an end.
Will there be a time when we don't have any conduct or litigation? I don't think that'll ever be the case, but I think that we will get through the big cases of the past and deal with those issues.
Focusing on Lloyds a bit closer, mis-selling of payment protection insurance cost them $12 billion. Have these payments changed behaviour, though, at the bank? So it comes as This Is Money report that Lloyds staff reveal concerns that management might be piling on more pressure to sell products so they can hit sales target after a slump in sales. Well, let's start there, shall we? Tell us a little bit more, as this is, well, your exclusive, is it not?
Yes, it is, yes. So Lee Boyce, our savings expert and banking expert, has been following this story for some time and reporting on it, and he's had quite a few whistleblowers come forward. He's got some really good contacts amongst staff who work at Lloyds who have revealed how, in essentially Britain's biggest bank, there is this pressure sales thing going on. Now, Lloyds is meant to have done something about that, and it's ditched its sales targets. But the suggestion is from staff, from these whistleblowers, that it's now just couched in different language, helping customers. You know, they're rated on feedback, and you have to get, the only way you can get a bonus is through this feedback. But how much are they still pushing these products? And actually, Lloyds has seen a massive decline in the number of products being taken out. So I've got here from Lee's story. In the first 12 weeks of 2015, Lloyds saw 45% fewer customers in branches take out loans. In the first 3 months of 2014, when sales targets were still in place, 50,000 insurance products were taken out. This year, the number fell to 15,000. So that's a massive drop. And it shows removing these sales targets has actually seen the number of people taking out products drop. Mm. Now, I think we can pretty much safely work on the basis that there's not just been a sudden decline in the need for insurance. People do still need to be insured, but maybe actually the number of people who needed to be insured is a lot closer to the 15,000 than it was to the 50,000. And to be clear, there's no suggestion here that there's the kind of systematic mis-selling that went on with PPI, which is what PPI was. The figures that we heard about Lloyds earlier, the figures we heard about Barclays, they're being haunted by the mistakes of the past. And the banks were pretty stupid here, because we've discussed this on the show before. We warned about mis-selling of PPI and started a campaign to stop them doing it in about 2005. And the banks continued to do this till about 2010. So imagine how much money they would have saved if they just stopped mis-selling PPI when everyone pointed out to them that they were mis-selling PPI.
I think Lloyds is just going to have to accept that they're not going to be able to sell as much in branches anymore and move on from that, rather than trying to revamp what they do.
And it can't only be Lloyds, though, can it?
Ordinary people don't want to go into their bank and be harassed to buy things that they don't necessarily need. They want to do their business and move on. And it's not just when you go into a bank. I was just trying to pay off my credit card with M&S Bank on the phone the other night, and I don't really want to have a go at M&S because they're really good and they're very well run and efficient. But this chap wanted to know what I was having for dinner, and when I said, well, I just want to pay my bill so I can actually then have my dinner. And then he tried to sell me a second credit card. And he backed up immediately when I said I wasn't in the market for another credit card and I just wanted to pay my bill, thank you. But it just shows how they have to keep upselling everything. And you just don't want to do that. You just want to do your business and get out the door. And I think they're just going to have to accept that.
What have Lloyds said, by the way, in all of this, in response to Lee's sleuth-like investigation?
I shall read you out the comment here. It said, "We do not recognise or endorse the style of language that the newsletter claims has been used in the email." This is a newsletter from the trade union, basically, that was suggesting that basically pressure selling was still going on. "We're a customer-focused business. We expect our colleagues to spend time with customers and show knowledge and expertise when helping them. Our advisors are here to support customers, and if a customer wants to speak to someone in a branch, they can. It is important that this process is managed efficiently to help customers avoid long waiting times when they want to see someone to help with their finances. It therefore makes sense to ensure customers are able to provide the right information and documentation in their appointments to help make the best use of their time. To reiterate, and as highlighted above, we have not reintroduced any outcome targets and sales points remain a thing of the past. We continue, as we always have, to review how our colleagues interact and support customers, and we'll always look at new and different ways to do this." So I'm not really sure what they're saying there. The point is, basically, there's nothing wrong with your bank telling you that they might have a better product for you. You know, the bank should do that. If the bank thinks that you've got a credit card and they might have a credit card that's better for you, then that's, you know, why not tell someone? But this sort of pushing of products that's gone on is a hangover from the pile them high, sell them cheap, you know, supermarket-style mass banking that we had through much of the previous decade. It's got to stop, because... But it's very difficult if you are a massive bank like Lloyds or, you know, to go back from that position, to change your business, because your business has evolved into something that's dependent upon that. Whereas I think that there are other banks out there, you know, small banks, smaller building societies, that show that you can make money from banking, you can make a profit from banking without doing all of this stuff. The difficulty is once you're a very big bank that's making loads of money off this, it's really difficult to get back to that point.
Spoken there about Lloyds staff, let's focus on some of the numbers that we mentioned there earlier after they've been reporting their half-yearly figures, many of the banks this week. And we've also seen how much is being put aside for PPI. But also what came out as well was Barclays putting money aside, £250 million, to compensate customers missold packaged bank accounts. Now, some people we've spoken to here on Share Radio said this could be the next sort of PPI scandal. Someone explain to us what that's about.
Well, packaged bank accounts are bank accounts that you basically pay for. Because we have free banking in this country, which we pay for by banks not giving us interest on the money that's sat in our accounts, and by the fact that they feel this compulsion to try and flog us loads of other stuff to make a bit of money on the side. The alternative to that is you pay for your bank account. But people don't really like the concept of paying for a bank account. So what banks do in order to sell you a bank account is they bundle a load of other stuff in, which are these so-called packaged current accounts. So you might get some mobile phone insurance. You might get some extra sort of ID fraud protection insurance. You might get some travel insurance bundled in. And it's always very difficult to work out whether these things are a good deal. And it always depends on how much you are likely to use the product that is going to be in there and whether you could put those products together cheaper elsewhere. And quite a lot of the time, a lot of people could basically get a separate mobile phone insurance policy, a separate travel insurance policy and everything else like that. That's a better policy, better suited to their needs, and it still comes in cheaper. But these have been really pushed by banks in recent years. And they're still out there. Some of them are good. Some of them are not so good. But I think the issue here is basically if you walk into your bank, if you bank with a high street bank, you walk into your bank, expect them to try and sell you something. And if they do try and offer you something, remember, basically, the person talking to you is a salesman. Mm. They're trying to sell you something. And you quite likely could get a better deal by comparing prices across the rest of the market. So as long as you approach it with that mentality,
to treat it like a mobile phone or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's not the old-fashioned bank manager in a suit, you know, kind of helping you navigate your way through life. There's a salesman there trying to flog you stuff, and you might be able to get a better deal elsewhere.
Now, all of this comes as this week the City Watchdog, the Financial Conduct Authority, came out and said that banks, well, they weren't really acting fast enough to put right the problems, more problems here, that led to the benchmark scandals, the ones like Forex and LIBOR. So is sticking another naught on the end of fines working? Doesn't seem so. Finance expert Holly Mackay from boringmoney.co.uk says the banks just aren't listening to those methods.
The FCA has come up with another report saying, you're not doing it properly, guys. Enormous fines which get handed out, and the banks seem to absorb it, and in 6 months' time we'll be talking about another FCA smacking and the banks doing something wrong again.
So the FCA did, though, acknowledge some changes had been made, but they aren't consistent or speedy enough. What sort of past scandals are we talking about here when I say things like Forex and LIBOR, Tanya?
Well, the charges were really that they were manipulating these rates in their own interests. And although ordinary people couldn't really fathom exactly how it was affecting their own pocket, by setting the rates at a level that were favourable to them, the banks were making money and everyone else was losing out, even if it was only a little bit. I think that these things will keep going on unless there is a culture change. The trouble is that the softly approach we've had so far doesn't seem to have worked. As far as I know, no one's gone to jail yet. And I actually think maybe we need a culture of fear. And that's the only thing that will actually work. If they're too scared to do this kind of thing, then perhaps they'll move on.
You're a tough lady. A culture of fear, more people go to jail?
We've sat here reporting these things over and over again for years and years, and they don't seem to have got the message, and they don't seem to take anything that any penalties seriously enough. So, yeah, I'll take a hard line on that.
Simon?
There's an interesting comparison to be drawn, actually, here between what's gone on at the banks and some of the people who have found themselves accused of rigging LIBOR or rigging Forex rates, and what goes on when someone gets caught insider trading. And insider trading is basically, you know, taking advantage of your insider knowledge of a company to make money on the shares. And actually, insider trading and is one of those things that they come down pretty heavy on in terms of white-collar crime. You know, people go to jail for a number of years for this kind of stuff. They go to jail for 3-4 years. But nobody's been sent to jail for the Forex and LIBOR. And so the question is, you know, should we be coming down as hard on these people as we are on individuals who get caught insider trading? And those individuals who get caught insider trading can range from, you know, big senior execs on big name companies to, you know, small time people working in the finance industry and stuff like that. So I don't know. Maybe we send people to jail for too long for insider trading. Maybe we should go softer on them. Maybe that's the answer.
Maybe. Editor Simon Lambert. Do let us know, by the way. If you have any views, text us 66777. Text must start with the word share.
Morning Money. The markets, the papers and the city. Today's need to know on Share Radio.
Every morning from 6 to 9, tune in to Morning Money on Share Radio.
With Sandra Kilhoff and Mark Johnson.
An in-depth look at the UK and global markets and business.
Giving you all the day's need to know.
Morning Money.
Getting you ready for the day ahead.
A very warm welcome. I'm Georgie Frost. In the studio with me, editor Simon Lambert, journalist Tanya Jeffries. And coming up, we reveal the top cash ISAs. But first, are you hoping to get a good deal on your mortgage? Well, you better get your skates on, as Britain's biggest mortgage lenders have started axing their cheapest fixed rate deals. It comes after the governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, hinted interest rates might rise around January time. So far, Barclays, Santander, Yorkshire Building Society have begun upping their rates and removing their cheap mortgage deals. Well, Hannah Maundrell, editor-in-chief from money.co.uk, says this is a big worry for families with a tight budget.
Many households will end up with rate shock if the Bank of England base rate starts to increase and their mortgage increases accordingly. Many households are on a tight budget and you know, even a £20-£50 a month increase could make a massive difference to affordability.
So, Simon, tell us what's going on here.
Well, at some point, the Bank of England is going to raise interest rates. Now, who knows when that point may be? Because we've been waiting an awful long time for the Bank of England to raise interest rates. But the suggestion is that this might come around the turn of the year. Or they're going to start really considering raising interest rates around the turn of the year. They didn't say they were going to raise them around the turn of the year. Mark Carney made a couple of speeches, the Bank of England governor, to that effect a couple of weeks back. And that has delivered the traditional interest rate sort of rush panic kind of scenario. Where this time around, to be fair, actually, this has happened quite a few times over the past 6 years. And what tends to happen is people suddenly start thinking interest rates are going to go up a bit sooner than expected. And banks and building societies start pulling their cheapest fixed rate deals because customers are rushing to them to take out mortgages. Mm-hmm. And so they go, we could make a little bit more money off the back of this. And also because the expectation of interest rates has an effect on mortgage pricing. The underlying cost to banks of getting that money in to lend out changes dependent on where the market thinks interest rates are going to be in the future. Now, what's happened this time around, of course, is that this suggestion has happened. People have said to people, right, you need to be getting out there and fixing your mortgage. And so banks have started to pull their best deals. But it should be noted that, A, there's no need to panic. Don't just suddenly blunder in going, because interest rates are going to go up very, very slowly and gradually. And what you're seeing here is the knee-jerk reaction to Carney's comments. But also, B, that mortgages are still exceptionally cheap, historically
cheap.
Give
us some of the figures we're talking about here.
Well, if you are the kind of person who is lucky enough to have a substantial amount of equity in your property, so you have 40% deposit or 40% equity in your home, you could fix your mortgage at below 2.5%, about 2.3%, which is very, very cheap money for 5 years. So for the next 5 years, you won't see your interest rate rise above that. If you think that you're willing to take a shorter-term view and fix for 2 years, you could fix below 1.5%, which is, again, very, very cheap. The only thing to worry about there is that it's almost certain that in 2 years' time, interest rates are going to be higher than they are now, and that's probably about the point where the trajectory might be picking up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's something to consider in the whole 2 versus 5 year thing. If you've got a smaller deposit, say, for example, 25% to put down, then you're going to find out that you're paying more. But you might be fixing for 5 years for 3.5% or something like that, which by, you know, historic standards is cheap. These are record low rates. If you do have a mortgage on a higher rate, and you're not locked into a fixed deal that you'd have to pay a lot of money to leave, then it is worth considering fixing your mortgage now, especially if rates do move up and you think you'd find yourself kicking yourself in 6 months' time when that, you know, 5-year fix below 2.5% might be a 5-year fix at 3%.
Well, you have a whole host of figures here on your website as to who's cutting what and by how much. David Hollingworth, who you've interviewed, Director of London and Country, says when major banks and building societies start cutting rates, it can have a domino effect and lead to other lenders following suit. As you mentioned there, homeowners should look to fix now while there are still some amazing deals on offer. If they wait for interest rates to rise before they make a move, they will miss out.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but I should state here something, right? I've got a tracker mortgage. So that follows the base rate, the Bank of England mm-hmm. base rate. When I took out my tracker mortgage 4 years ago, it was at, well, 2.75%. And actually, that mortgage I took out 4 years ago was a 5-year tracker mortgage, right? And normally I'd go for a lifetime tracker, but this was a really good deal. They basically gave you a load of money and free fees, free survey, free legal when we were buying a house. And that doesn't normally happen. And I thought that I'd probably have to leave that deal within a couple of years when interest rates started moving up. And so there was no early repayment charges, so I made sure of that. Now, it's 4 years down the line, and interest rates still haven't moved at all. And in fact, actually, in that time period, I've remortgaged onto another tracker rate mortgage, a lifetime tracker rate mortgage with First Direct, because I wanted an offset mortgage, and I thought that was a better deal. Now, in the back of my mind, there is the knowledge that interest rates are going to move up. These fixed rates are historically cheap. Maybe I might be wise to take one. But I also might move in 2 years' time. So I don't want to necessarily lock into a 5-year mortgage that I could find myself having to pay myself out of. The reason why I'm happy with that tracker is because I'm in the fortunate position that if I get it wrong and interest rates do go up a bit quicker than thought, then me and my wife have the spare money to deal with that. You know, we've been saving money over that time because thanks to the cheap mortgage rate, we've been putting a bit more aside every month to cover what would happen if rates rose. So we can deal with that scenario. If you're not in that position and if your mortgage rate went up, it would really cause you trouble, then you really need to be thinking about fixing your mortgage.
Well, we've been hearing a lot about mortgages. Mortgage approvals went up 3% in June. The Bank of England said around 66,500 home loans were agreed with a total value of £11.5 billion.
I mean, you're just seeing more confidence in the property market. You're seeing more people buying, more people moving, and so you're seeing mortgage approvals rising. Last week we were talking about all the people who are moving in Swindon.
Yes, we did.
But there is a little bit more confidence. It's like the property market has totally been dominated by London and the South East for much of the last 5 years, and now actually around the rest of the country it's starting to move on a bit, I think.
You think this is going to continue, Tanya?
Yes, I think there is a bit more confidence because the economy isn't doing too badly at the moment in most people's minds. But we do have a problem with supply. I think a lot of people would like to move, but when they start looking around, they find there's not many houses on the market. So it's good that approvals are going up because it may mean that some of those are shaking free now.
Well, sticking with rates, in your savings correspondent, Lee Boyce, he's been a busy boy, hasn't he? Hot off the press is five favourite cash ISAs for savers in 2015. Essential reading to help you choose a top saving account for your money. So firstly, let's go to basics. How does a cash ISA work?
It's a savings account that you put your money into, and the interest that you earn from it is free of tax, and that is the beauty of cash ISA. And there's an annual allowance which you can put in there, which is up to £15,000. And for most people, they're not going to manage to save £15,000 in a year. So if you are going to save into a savings account, then it makes a lot of sense to save into a cash ISA.
I mean, obviously rates have been quite low. Government have changed a few things around. But Lee still thinks he's got the top five. So what are they?
Well, this is our regular, this is our roundup that we've been running for many years now, and it's one of the most popular articles on the site because it basically narrows down the field into five choices. If you're looking for an ISA, five different kinds of ISA, these are five of the best. So if you want a good ISA, this is what a good one looks like, not just the one that when you walk into your bank, some bloke tries to flog you. So Virgin Money have got a easy access ISA that pays 1.51%. Now, that's not going to shoot the lights out, we know, but it's the best deal on the market. Whereas Coventry have a 2-year fixed rate ISA that pays 2.05%. So you can see there that basically you lock your money up for a little bit more time, but in return for that, you get a higher rate. Now, I mean, one of the problems, you, as you mentioned, with ISAs is just savings rates are terrible.
What else have you been looking for in this? Because it's not just the rates, is it? It's how perhaps flexible they are. Can you transfer money into them?
I think the transfer thing is very important.
Explain
because
that for us.
A lot of people have got, historically, they've built up a lot of ISAs that they're sitting on and they want to know what to do with it. Sometimes they've put them in at a good rate, but they're now on a low rate. I've got one like that, which I need to transfer. So one of the first things you look for when you see a really great deal is, can I actually move my existing ISAs there? I think some people are happy to spread all their pots around. I personally quite like to consolidate mine, so I've got as little admin to deal with as possible because I don't want to spend too much of my life dealing with it.
You mentioned there about rates. Rates are low, but that just makes an ISA more important, says Lee.
It does, yeah, because if rates are low, then you don't want tax eating into the interest that you're getting, do you? So, you know, you're taxed at the income tax rate currently on your savings income. So that's either 20%, 40% or 45%. If it's in an ISA, then that's tax-free. Now, the government's changing this, and you're going to be able to get the first £1,000 of your interest tax-free if you're a basic rate taxpayer. But that's not come in yet. That's from next year. And somewhere down the line, you might find that the government changes that or another government changes that. Now, what you probably won't find is that a government decides to remove the cash ISA perk of tax-free interest. So it makes sense to get your money into a cash ISA because as long as it's within that ISA, that interest paid on it will always be tax-free. And because rates on standard accounts and ISAs are broadly level, it does make sense to save into an ISA.
So if you have filled up that £15,240 allowance and you've got a little bit of extra cash, where do you put it? Well, for our next story, Simon, Tanya, I want you to guess what we're going to focus on via Annie's medium of sound. So tired,
tired of waiting for you. Finds as the referee, Shane Williams now, sees the space, and Williams flying to the line.
Gold finger.
Talking alternative investments, anybody want to give us in order what they relate to the stories on your website? Simon, you should know them all.
Ah, oh, it's a quiz. I didn't realise it was going to be like a number of things that I had to guess. This is referring to bonds.
Yeah.
Not the James Bond kind.
Thank you.
But mini bonds that you can invest in. And I'm thinking that there's one where people are waiting for their money.
It's Highgrove.
So
tired. Yes, we were talking about Highgrove, and that was the Kinks. And then next?
There was an aeroplane at one point. It's like a
there was a crowd cheering, which must be the rugby.
Rugby, yes, my rugby ball maker Rhino offering mini bombs. That's a wind farm noise.
Oh, that's a wind farm. I thought it was an aeroplane.
Winds are hard.
That's the wind. People waiting for their money on a wind bond as well.
That's your aeroplane there. Yes, in order there we had the Kinks. On why investors have been waiting ages for Highgrove Osprey bonds to mature. Rugby game clip there. Why rugby ball maker Rhino are offering mini bonds. A bit of wind farm noise. That was a toughie, that one, Annie. More on why Wind Prospect Group has told lenders it can't pay the 7.5% annual return to savers. Shirley Bassey's gold finger now. Is now the best time to invest in gold? And finally, the beeping of car horns and of planes landing and taking off. How do you fancy investing your money in a Gatwick Airport parking space? But we start the romp around alternative investments with my favourite subject, sport. The association with sport and bonds continue in May. Rugby Union Club Wasps launched a retail bond giving fans and investors a 6.5% return. In September, before that, Lancashire County Cricket Club offered a mini bond paying 7% a year, both just to large degrees of success. Now, rugby ball maker Rhino, which counts sporting legend and former England rugby union manager Martin Johnson among its top shareholders, is getting in on the action. It will be issuing mini bonds offering a 7.5% return. The manufacturer of sports equipment and clothing hopes to raise £2 million to move into the US market. So ignoring the obvious question of what the Americans know about rugby, let's get back to basics. What are bonds, please, Tanya? What's the difference in retail versus mini bonds? Lesson 101.
Okay, well, they're basically loans that you make to a company, a single company. And there are basically two kinds. The mini bonds are fixed maturity. So you put your money in them. You don't see it again until the end of the term, although you do get what's called a coupon. So you do get interest paid out to you in the intervening years. With the retail bonds, they are listed on London Stock Exchange's Orb market, so they can be traded before the end. But obviously there's still risk involved because they might go up or down in value. And also you may not find many buyers for them.
Now, you spoke about the risks of going up and down in value, but there are a host of other risks as well.
Yes, there are. The sports ones are very interesting, actually, because obviously people are more likely to invest with a company, well, lend money to a company that they like, that they have warm feelings towards. And if you're a supporter of Wasps or Lancashire Cricket Club, then you're more likely to think, well, that sounds like a good idea. But ultimately, it's still an investment, and you still have to really go into the details of what these companies are offering, what their financial strength is, because if they go bust, you won't get your money back. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest risk of all. But some of these companies can be quite complex. It's quite difficult to find out how they're making their money and how you are actually going to get it back and where you are in the queue of creditors. You might, if you don't look at the small print, you might find, if they do go bust, that you're way down the list of creditors. So you need to find out that kind of thing in advance rather than just think, oh, right, well, I've supported Lancashire Cricket Club for years and years. That sounds like a good idea.
And often they give you discounts, don't they, on things like tickets as well, which might lure the fan in a little bit more. But unlike savings...
I would ignore all of those. You have to be really hard-headed about this. You cannot think about the perks. It's an investment.
So, bonds, right? They are theoretically a safer investment. And they are, you know, considered to be a safer investment than shares, because they have this thing where basically this, you invest in the company, they pay you back this fixed amount of money, and you get your money back at the end.
Yep.
But when it comes to buying and selling bonds and assessing companies, never forget one thing. You know all those big bankers that we hear about who theoretically were dominated this banking world that we don't like, of sharks and trading and that? The Bob Diamonds of this world. They were bond traders, okay? Bond traders, right? Anybody who's thinking about buying bonds, go read some of Michael Lewis's books. Michael Lewis, the American author, spent some years working in London for Salomon Brothers in the 80s, bond trading, okay? Read about some of the stuff that goes on there. It's really difficult to assess these companies and to assess their solvency, as Tanya said. And it's a really sharky world, the bond trading world, because there's not so much of a market, you know, a lot of... And if you can read across from the... This is talking about, you know, proper corporate bonds, but you can read across from that to mini bonds as well, because ultimately mini bonds aren't that different to a corporate bond beyond the fact that there's no market to trade them on. So just remember that bit, and that if you think back to most financial crises, actually they weren't caused by the stock market, they were caused by the bond market.
Well, that puts things into perspective, doesn't it? I do have to ask you as well, a corporate bond fund...
It's an investment fund where there's a manager who is buying bonds and essentially spreading the risk for you. So you might buy into a fund and that manager owns 50 different companies. Mm-hmm. And what he's doing is trying to deliver a set income level for you, so maybe 5% a year, and also make some capital growth on top of it, so to grow the value of the holdings. Now, what's interesting about bond funds is that if you speak to a lot of investment experts, they will tell you that actually most people would be better off buying a bond fund than buying an individual bond. And in essence, that is true, because it's spreading your risk. But what it does forget is that I think the difference with a lot of the people buying these retail bonds, certainly, you know, the London Stock Exchange's order of retail bond market, where you can buy and sell these bonds secondhand, is that they don't have any intention of selling out of that bond before the end. What they've done is they've looked at the bond and gone, 6%, 5 years, I will buy a bond, I will hold it for 5 years and take that 6%, and I'm happy with that. And so they don't want a manager buying and selling bonds in the market and trading to try and make some money. What they want is just that guaranteed set income. But if you do that, then you need to spread your risk. And so you need to have a portfolio of bonds, not just one. You need to spread it over maybe 10 or 15 bonds. And do you have the time to go out and buy 10 or 15 of these bonds? Are you going to go out and buy 10 or 15 of these bonds and really think about how strong that company is? If you're not going to do that, then you need to be a bit wary about investing in some of these things.
So also it's worth saying that unlike a savings account, you're not protected, is this right, by the UK's Financial Services Compensation Scheme, which guards against losses of up to currently £85,000, and that's going to be £75,000 from next January. That's right?
That is correct, and you really have to take that into account. Mm. And you can't just say, I want to buy retail bonds and take that as your investing approach. You have to look at each single one in isolation. This Wind one, Wind Prospect Group, they had what I suppose was a really good selling point, which was that they were getting subsidies for setting up onshore wind farms. And that was all great until the government came along and changed its stance on that. They're really clamping down now on subsidies. They don't want to do it anymore. So a government subsidy sounded like quite a safe income stream, but that can be taken away.
Well, let's focus on that story then in more detail. Our next one, savers asked to wait 3 months for interest due on wind farm bonds that promise 7.5% annual return. It's what happens when government policy puts a spanner in the works of investment. The company, Wind Prospect Group, are blaming the government, saying they have to restructure their business after the Tories' planned overhaul of green subsidies. So the bondholders are owed payments every January and July. They have to hold their horses. A few more details on this?
Well, I think the government wants to focus on what it thinks of as good value green subsidies in future. And a lot of the companies that are involved in this sector are having to revise their business plans and their business models. I think that's what they are planning to do at Wind Prospect Group. Obviously, they seem to be sincere in that. Mm. And it may well be that everybody will, in 3 months' time, get their delayed interest. We'll have to see what happens.
I guess, Simon, this is the problem with, and I don't want to use the word faddy, but it sort of is investing in something which is a sort of hot topic at the time, which is then subject to change for if a government comes in or a different party.
Well, if you're going to invest in something, then you need to do your due diligence, mm-hmm. right? You need to look into it properly. Now, I don't think that it should come to as a surprise to any investors that the government has decided to cut back on subsidies for renewable energy or was concerned that it was spending too much on it. This row's been going on for years about this. It's led to big cuts in the subsidies that individuals can get for solar panels to go on their roof. It's led to a massive change in the way that those are paid to companies who were investing in those solar panels. Also, I don't think that, you know, you'd need to have your head in the sand to realise that basically there's a lot of Tories who don't like wind farms and there's a big public backlash against wind farms. And so I think you need to consider all of these things in your mind when you're thinking about investing and then weigh up the fact that ultimately a lot of the income coming in from some of these renewable energy projects is reliant on the subsidies that they're receiving. And so I think you could probably work on the basis that the principle of not removing subsidies that have already been guaranteed for projects that have already been put in place, that have already started and already up and running, is a reasonable one to work on. But there's no guarantee of that. Mm-hmm. You know, your government could do that, could suddenly pull them away. Government could turn around tomorrow and say, do you know what? Those subsidies on solar panels, we're not going to pay them anymore and we'll see you in court. But you can probably work on a basis that's not going to happen. But in terms of businesses that are structured around this, or bonds that you're holding that are invested in businesses that are structured around this, or even some of the funds that are targeting this kind of thing, you know, they're going to depend not just on existing projects, but also on new projects coming on. And those new projects are the kind of thing that do get affected by governments changing their mind and deciding that actually we don't want to spend all this money on wind farms or something like that.
Do you have any rights here if you did buy any of these mini bonds? What's your right?
Buy beware.
And that's it?
I believe so.
So the company can do what they choose. If they say, we don't want to pay you in 3 months or 6 months, then we won't.
You signed up to a contract with mm-hmm. them that says, you know, I will lend you X amount of money and you will pay me X amount back. And you will pay me my capital back, and you will pay me my interest payments. But as we all know, there are situations in business where a business finds that it can't pay its bills on time, and then it has to go negotiate with the people who are its creditors, which in this case is small investors who've bought into these bonds.
It's you, if you
Yeah, so
it,
it's
yeah.
it's no different to, you know, a massive business suddenly finding itself in trouble and having to go to its banks and say, look, can you extend the line of credit a bit more, or we can't make this payment, or something like that.
We're talking of delays, and we lead on to our another story on this theme, and your reporter Lee Boyce, who's been incredibly busy doing even more sleuth reporting for one of your readers who had been waiting over 4 months for the interest in their one-year bond they opened with Highgrove Osprey. Despite over 150 phone calls and many excuses later, no joy. Tell us a little bit more about this bond in particular. Who are the companies involved and what's the situation now?
Oh, well, this is someone who invested in a one-year bond, and essentially it paid them 8.25% interest.
That's really high, isn't it? Some of these figures yeah. that we're hearing, 7.5%, 7, 8.5, these are in the context of what you can get normally.
Yeah, so, right, this should not set alarm bells ringing in saying, well, you know, don't do this, but it should be the bit that says to you, oh, I'm taking quite a high risk here. There's a reason why this company has to offer to pay people 8.25% to get money in. Because don't forget that bit. It's like a company will pay the interest that it needs to pay in order to convince you to give it money. And if it's got to pay you a lot of interest, then this is higher risk. So compare that to that one-year fixed-rate ISA. That's 1.7%. So this is a lot higher. And what happened with this reader is that basically they were meant to have had their money paid back to them. And it just didn't come. And they contacted them again and again and again, and nothing happened. Now, Lee then got in touch with this company and started looking into this. He explained, you know, sort of what was going on here. And the Highgrove spokesman, you know, came back and said, yes, we are sorry. We take our responsibilities to Mr. R very seriously. We've been in constant contact with Mr. R during this period. As Mr. R is aware, we have advised him that we expect repayment of his loan together with penalty interest within the next 3 banking days. Now, Lee then wrote, this email was sent on Friday the 17th of July. 3 working days later, another trip to the bank, the money still hadn't been repaid. A few more trips in the coming days also proved fruitless. Then finally, on Monday the 27th of July, the £5,000 that had been invested reached the account along with £500 extra, which is slightly more than they expected, and the 1 year's interest that they were already paid, which Lee said, you know, Highgrove has compensated the customer for this wait. But he said it's still unacceptable for a firm to delay repayment for more than 5 months, especially if you needed the cash for a specific reason. And that is, you know, the essence of it. And if you talk to people in the investing world who deal with kind of financing, you know, projects and property and things like that, they'll tell you there's two kinds of risk. There's the risk that you won't get your money back, and then there's liquidity risk. There's the fact that you will get your money back, but it might take you a very long time to get it back. And so those are two things to weigh up with these bonds, because even if the investment looks really good and there's something underlying it that it's secured on, it might take a long time to sell that asset, if they have to sell that asset, to give you the money back.
And that's
not necessarily the suggestion in this case, but obviously this business was struggling to get its hands on the money to pay back its investors.
I'm just thinking you could be earning money during that time with which you're waiting to get it back. So actually weighing it up, is it quite as high as you thought it was?
It's an opportunity cost
it
in
is.
Economics.
There you go then. Well, before we get on to golden car parks, I've been listening to you two and I've written down a few notes as to if I was thinking of getting involved in bonds and mini bonds. Some rule of thumb. So the higher the rate on offer, the higher the risk. Use your head, not your heart. Spread your risk. Get some financial advice. And if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Is that about right, you two?
Yes. On all the stories that I write about retail bonds and mini bonds, I have a handy checklist that I put at the bottom, which lists all the things that you should go through before you make an investment. And some of them are quite hard, like going and reading the balance sheet. But I still think you should do that.
Very briefly, we're going to touch on gold because we're running out of time. But in 30 seconds, Simon, I want you to tell me what's the situation in gold and is it worth putting a bit of money in it?
Gold, long-term store of value, was up a lot after the financial crisis, hit a peak of $1,900 4 years ago. Since then, down a lot, down 40%, mainly because people's fears over high inflation have dissipated, now threatening to go back through the $1,000 an ounce barrier, which would be a significant milestone. Will it do that? Who knows? Problem with gold is it doesn't actually make you any money, but it's just traded. Generally considered as an insurance, a hedge against stuff going really, really wrong in the world, but you may struggle to buy bread with it if stuff does happen.
I think you did that in 40, but that's all right. We'll give you that extra 10 seconds. So we've spoken a lot about investing, from the good to the bad to the slightly different, and this is the downright bizarre, actually. Pensioners are getting the chance, if you should so want to invest your pension freedoms, in Gatwick Airport's parking space. Yes, I kid you not, parking spaces. It costs £25,000 to invest in, but the seller guarantees you'll get an 8% return for at least 2 years. The catch, well, you already have to own one of the £20,000 worth of space in Glasgow Airport. Can you really invest in a parking space?
Yes, you can. It is at the high risk end of investing, in my opinion. The as Simon said, if the interest rate is that high, then it comes with risk. You also have to look at who you're going to sell it to as well. And there may be no easy exit from that kind of investment.
There is a concern, though, isn't there, in terms of pensioners? I mentioned it at the start there.
Yes, I mean, it's not only being marketed to pensioners.
No, of course
but
not.
That is one marketing strand they're obviously following.
As I'm sure a lot of companies are at the moment, for good or for very bad and scams.
Yes, I mean, if you've got an incredibly big pension pot, then maybe putting what amounts to 45,000 in Glasgow and Gatwick car parking spaces seems okay. But most people, that's a really big chunk of their entire pot, and they shouldn't be putting it all in one thing. It's much better to spread it out.
Fancy a bit of Gatwick?
Oh, I'd love to pay for more money for Gatwick parking, and yeah, also for Glasgow as well, a place I never fly from. You wouldn't even get any benefit from it. They should actually do a thing where you at least get to park there free for a bit of the year, wouldn't they? But actually, as Tanya said, right, if you're going to invest in something like this, you need to have very deep pockets and a very high appetite for risk. And to put the figures in context, £45,000 in a parking space, you if you're rich enough and like risk enough to do this, you probably shouldn't put more than about 3 or 4% of your investable wealth into it. So you need at least £1 million of investable wealth. And if you haven't got that, don't buy the parking space. That's just my view.
Good advice. There you go. If you had £1 million, would you spend it on a car parking space? Editor Simon Lambert, Tanya Jeffries, thank you so much for joining us. Share Radio.